listening to Culture Mark Pop.
It's going to be hilarious.
You'd best put seatbelts on your ears, Roy. Because I'm going to take them for the ride of their lives.
On BoozDesSays.net.
Oh, man. It's the stoner rock version of I can dig this, man. Hey, you're locked into Culture My Pop. Happy Saturday to your ass, wherever it may be. My name's Des Delgadillo. I'm flying solo this week. I don't have a sensual, deep-voiced black man, nor do I have a Indian British gentleman with me this week. And that's because I got a good friend coming by in just a little bit. A very funny comedian based out of Kansas City, Jeremy Smith, is going to be on the show. A friend who I have a history with, although this will be my very first time talking to him. We'll give you some background on that in a little bit. But I want to let you know right now, before we go any further, this is a totally free podcast that we do every week just for you, a labor of love, and we love doing it. Although, sometimes you think, well, maybe a little help would be appreciated. And it's not that hard to help out. If you ever feel like, man, I love this podcast, I wish I could help, I wish I could give back, because I'm that kind of person, I'm a humanitarian, well, you can. If you go up to thingsdesays.net, that's our little website there, you can click on the Amazon link, and that'll take you to the Amazon.com that you know and love. Only every purchase that you make there on Amazon will help us out just a little bit. We can pay for these podcast hosting fees. I can pay for a better microphone if you think, hey, man, you need a better microphone. Although, to be honest, I kind of like this microphone. It's nice. It's sturdy. But you can support that. But if you think, hey, man, I don't have any money, but I still want to help you out a little bit, well, you can. Just head on over to iTunes. Check me out, Des Delgadillo. Leave a review for this podcast. Say, hey, I love this podcast, iTunes. You should feature it in your store because it's just that good. It's not that hard. Just leave us two words. You're good. Or to something to that effect. And give us some 5 stars. Drive that algorithm up a little bit, man. Because podcasting, it's all about the numbers. I did some good shows this week. Had a fun time. Very unique comedy experiences over the last week. I did an ice skating rink on Tuesday night in Pasadena, California. I played a bowling alley last night in Canoga Park. All I need now is a golf course, and I'll complete the white sports trifecta. If somebody wants to book me on a golf course, by all means, man, I'm willing. Or maybe I could do stand-up at a tetherball court. Any kind of white people sport, I'm totally into it. Maybe at a shuffleboard competition, I wouldn't mind being the opening act for that. Point is, I've done comedy at some very unique places, and that's kind of what I wanted to talk about. And I guess this goes into what I learned from comedy this week. What I learned from comedy this week, the crazier the venue, the more unique the venue, the better. And I'll tell you why, man. When you play comedy clubs, everyone's going there to see comedy. They're going there, they're ready to laugh, they're ready to obey the 2-drink minimum and have a good time. When you do like an ice skating rink, or you do like a bowling alley, what I did, or hell, a tetherball court, I don't know. People aren't there to see comedy. They're there to see sports. And that's your time as a comedian, as a performer. That's when you're actually tested. They're telling you, hey, man, capture these people's attention. Make them want to see you. Earn the attention. As a comedian, why do we do this, man? We do this because we want attention. We want you to pay attention to us. I'm talking right now with the expectation that you're paying attention to the things that I am saying. When you do a comedy club, people are paying attention to you, but it's like you've entered into a contract, right? You're going to go to the show. You're going to pay attention to this comedian. People are going to an ice skating rink because they want to see ice skating. They don't want to see a comedian on the other side telling jokes, making fun of the skaters. You are tested. It's your chance to earn these people's affection, and you can make them love you, or if you don't do so well, you're going to make them hate you. But when you do these places, like a couple weeks ago, I did a blind veterans unit in Long Beach. I played their hospital unit. I was their entertainment, along with a couple other comedians. People don't expect comedians at these kinds of places. It's a hospital, man, a hospital for veterans. Kind of a sad place. You go there, though, you make these people laugh. You have to win them over. You have to capture their attention. You have to win their love. And then, once you do these kinds of venues, you go to a comedy club, you do the comedy store, you do the improv. It's a fucking cakewalk. So my advice to any comedians out there, and again, I'm in no position to give you advice, but these are the things that I'm doing, and I think they're working out for me, and they're making me a better comedian. Do these venues that seem kind of unique to you. I have a buddy who said he did a show at a Korean shower house. Now, I was a little afraid to ask for details beyond that, to be honest. But basically, you're in a shower, and you're doing comedy for Korean gentlemen, and I'm sure there are women there, too. That's crazy, man. The more unique the venue, the more opportunity you have to improve your craft as a comedian. So if somebody comes up to you tomorrow and say, hey, do you want to do comedy at a bingo hall? Say yes. I will be there because although it might be a brutal crowd that night, I might have a tough time. I might come away from the show feeling terrible about myself. I'm making myself a better comedian. And when I get that gig at the improv or at the comedy store or wherever, man, I'm going to be that much better of a comedian. I'm going to be prepared. I'm going to have the ability to just go with an audience and give them a good time. That's what I learned from comedy this week. And it's what I think you should learn this week, too. Let's get to the show, man. I talked to Jeremy Smith, a really good friend of mine, a message board buddy of mine. Yes, I used to be very into the message board scene. We're going to talk a little bit about that. Before Jeremy was even a stand-up comedian, we were already talking. We were chatting and stuff. But we have kind of a history together, as you'll hear about. But we're talking all about Jeremy's writing for a talk show now in Kansas City with Chris Porter involved. He's doing all sorts of really cool stuff, man. And I wanted to bring him on and talk to him just about transitioning, being a stand-up comedian, being a writer, doing all sorts of cool things. So let's talk to Jeremy right now. Remember, you can follow him on Twitter at JeremyNKC. That's JeremyNKC. Check him out, man. You're listening to Culture My Pop on ThingsDezSays.net. Let's talk to my homeboy, Mr. Jeremy Smith. You're just recording the conversation. Like, you don't know what you say may or may not be held against you in a court of podcasting.
Definitely. Yeah, no, I'm into it. We can talk about whatever. I'm sorry. I'm slightly distracted because this fucking Reddit thing is just blown up this morning.
So tell me what you did, because you put a stand-up. What's a stand-up shot?
Stand-up shot is something a friend of mine, Mike Baldwin, who's like tours all over the country, a really, really funny comic. I was at a barbecue with him, and he was talking about his stand-up shot. And I had heard about it before, but I never I looked at it. It's basically on Reddit. There's a whole like subreddit community for it where you take a picture of yourself doing stand-up, and like you Photoshop in like a joke, one of your jokes on top of the picture.
Okay.
And then you just post it, and you know, people upvote it or downvote it, you know, based like on like anything else on Reddit. And so I've done like four or five of them over the last like 2 weeks, just using older bits that I've done for a while that I still do in my set for the most part, but just fucking around with it. And so today I posted one of my longtime jokes, and I posted it like 6 hours ago. And it's like a 2,200 positive karma right now, which is crazy. The image has like 125,000 image views on Imgur. Like, insane. Like, 125,000 people have seen my joke. It's like nuts to me in 6 hours. So, it's just been, I've just been kind of enveloped with that. And the fact that, I mean, I'm a big, giant, fat guy, and it's a fat joke. The comments are like any comment section on the internet.
Yes.
Completely brutal. I've just been wading through just people like angry shit. But I mean, overall, if you look at the positive karma, like more people like love the joke than hate the joke. But yes. Man, it's just like brutal. It might come up it is karma for all the people I've bullied on the internet in my life. So
I'm looking at it right now, and you're getting some very helpful exercise advice for some people.
Oh yeah,
and yeah. You've congratulations. You've inspired a vigorous exercise debate with your joke.
Yeah, I mean, I know I need exercise, so I love when, I think all stand-ups love when one of their jokes sparks a philosophical debate.
Yes.
That's exactly the reaction you want to go for. Luckily, on stage, this joke has never done anything but get a laugh.
Yeah.
It's never sparked I wouldn't really want it to spark a debate live in a bar or on the stage. That would be counterproductive to what I'm doing. So
I've been on Reddit for a whole 2 weeks now, and my favorite thing about it is you can post the most like random dick joke that you can think of, and then you leave it, just kind of let it simmer for a couple hours, and you come back, and there's this semi-intelligent debate going on in the comments, and it's like, what?
Reddit is super weird. I've had an account for 2 years, actually. Uh-huh. Like, I signed up when I, like, a couple years ago when I heard about stand-up shots, actually, and just never posted one. Yeah. And never really looked at, like, I've looked at Reddit, but I don't think I've logged into Reddit until a couple weeks ago. I think it's the first time I'd logged in since I'd signed up. And it's insane. Like, I could have never expected it to blow up like this did. You know, and I think you said, take the good with the bad. A lot of people are seeing my joke, you know, so if people want to be assholes or, you know, want to overly just pick apart the joke, then that's fine. Whatever. That didn't bother me.
So how does this work, though? Like, I've never gotten much traction on Reddit. How does it work, like, when a lot of people see your joke, can you also, like, link to your website or something so people know how to see more of you? Or is it just kind of a one and done?
The problem is I don't have a website. Like I need to get a website. I've been doing comedy for over 3 years now, so I just never. It's all been local stuff, so I don't have a website. So I put my Twitter handle on there, and I've gotten a few followers off of this.
Nice.
But and a few have found their way to my Facebook fan page, which I don't really post on. So I'm terrible about that.
No, those are terrible though. I've got mine. And I automated it for a while, just like have WordPress post stuff. And that when I look at it, it looks like it's a spam page. So I stopped doing that. And now it's just like Facebook is such a pain in the ass if you're trying to manage your brand.
Well, those are terrible because they don't get shown unless you pay. Like,
yes.
So I have there's a lot of comics. There's a comic locally the other day was posting about how he was getting rid of going to stop using his main regular page. And just switched to his fan page, and I'm like, that's stupid because no one will see it. Like, people will see your actual post on your regular page, and you know he's like, well, I'm tired of all like personal dramas. They will just treat your regular page like it's your fan page. Just use your regular Facebook as a business. You know, like
nobody needs regular actual friends.
Yeah,
what are those things
seriously.
For?
Yeah, no, but. If the only way I can see you even needing a Facebook fan page is if you have more than 5,000 friends.
Yeah.
Because that's the cap like limit of friends. So I mean, those bigger comics need that stuff, but for me it's just not even really worth it.
By the way, don't you love how Facebook just decided how many friends is too many friends? Just like 5,000, nope, that's too social now.
Yeah, you can't. You have more than 5,000 friends. You're obviously like an entity, so you need a fan page.
You need to pay after that.
Yeah,
it's crazy, man. You've been doing comedy for 3 years. That's it's a long time, man. How'd you get involved?
3 years, but I've been super lazy, like in stretches in there. So I've been doing it for 3 years. I haven't been like crazy active all 3 years. I'll go through spurts where I'm like hitting it, like. All the open mics and doing everything I can, and then I'll go like through spells for a few months where I'm just not going to anything, and then except for like if I get a paid booking, I'll take it. But I'm just I'm not really actively getting better, you know. The first year year and a half, I was hardcore into getting on as much as possible. And then you get kind of disillusioned a little bit, you know, the clubs don't, you know, book you. So you're like, you start to, you know, question yourself and you just get, you know, tired of the same people getting booked all the time. So you get a little crazy. You just got to tell yourself just to, you know, plug on. And if you judge by reaction on the stage, like, I feel exactly. like I get a genuinely, like, super positive reaction. People, like, always generally like what I do. So I know if I stay the course and keep getting better, that things will happen. It just, they don't always happen the same, like a set generic, you know, time frame, you know.
When you got started, though, did you just, like, did you go with the idea that I'm going to get on stage as soon as I can? Or were you like some of these guys that I look at who are like, well, I'm going to write a bunch of material and maybe I'll get on stage in a year? Because I'm looking at these guys like, really? Why don't you just get on stage now?
Yeah, no, I have super stage fright. When I started, brutal. I have a lot of social anxiety. So I had always liked comedy. What really sparked me wanting to try comedy, like finally wanting to do it on stage, was I saw Jordan Brady's documentary, I Am Comic. I don't know if you've seen it.
Right. No, it's on my list of things to watch.
It was really inspiring for me. I've watched it probably before I ever did comedy, probably 10, 15 times.
Nice.
It's something I just stumbled upon on Netflix, and I always was funny. I was always a funny guy amongst friends, you know. I was always cracking jokes. You know, I'm fairly quick-witted. I was always the internet troll, you know. For the first person to pounce on somebody on the message board or something.
Yeah.
I always, as you know quite well.
Oh, I know. We'll get into that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I was with friends at a bar one night, some coworker friends, and I had mentioned that I've always wanted to try stand-up. And they were really positive, like, and like, you know, you need to do that. And then I kind of was like, tried to brush them off, but they really didn't let me. They wouldn't give up. They just kept going at me and going at me. And so finally, I went to the Casey Improv website and I saw they had an open mic night, which I later found out is not an open mic night. It is a local stand up showcase that they call an open mic night, and it was really hard to get on. But me, I just said, okay, I'll email them. And then if they don't email me back or they blow me off, then I can tell my friends I tried. And then, you know, they're really, I like the idea of doing stand up, but I was terrified.
Yes.
So I emailed them and I said, hey, all my friends want to see me do stand up. And, I got on because I used the words all my friends and they saw dollar signs like any comedy club, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. It's the ultimate bringer show.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And so I got on. My first show was at the Improv. I had all kinds of friends go. I had a panic attack right before, bad panic attack. But I wrote a lot of material. I had like 3 weeks before the thing, and so I just wrote and wrote and wrote. And took a lot of stuff I saw in the documentary about like structuring a joke and just stuff that I, you know, had picked up by just like watching stand-up. And so I feel like I had material when I started. And the stage presence wasn't there at all, but... Right. I had enough material that I got a good reaction the first time, and like a really good reaction actually. And I, it just you that adrenaline rush you get when you have or after having a good set, and you know,
yes,
you know, of course. And I couldn't sleep that night, man. I didn't sleep for like 2 days. It was the best feeling ever. And then I found bar open mic the next week, and then I started doing another comedy club open mic every week, and been doing it kind of ever since. Just it's addicting, and I've come a long way on stage. I've really starting to feel very, very comfortable.
Yeah, it's hard to quit, man. It's hard to kick the habit.
Yeah, I could never quit. Like I even last night, I went to an open mic, and it's just a rough night. I had a good time hanging out with friends, but open mic is too big, and it was like 1:15 in the morning, and I still hadn't been called. So I was like, "Fuck it," yeah. I just left. And I was thinking about driving home, and I debate quitting stand-up like way too often. I never will, but I debate it.
This is where you just have an off night, like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Absolutely. Like, what am I wasting my fucking time? Like, so yeah, I do that all the time. It's But the feeling of doing well, like, is the best thing in my life. Like, it's not even close, right?
Yeah.
I couldn't live without it now. It is, like, the singular driving force keeping me going on this earth. Like, it is the only reason to live at the moment. Like, that sounds horrible, but, like, that's the way it feels, you know?
It gets you through, man. Like, for me, I started using stand-up as a way to get through school. Like, that was my motivation, is I'm going to go to college and work hard for this 4.0 and this piece of paper that probably means nothing. Yeah. But I'm going to do stand-up on the weekends. And that was kind of my motivator. But I wanted to ask you, though, because you've bombed and you've done well. You've experienced both, as have I. And if do you think at that improv show, if you had come out there and you had done poorly, would you still be doing it today?
Probably not.
Yeah, it's scary, right? It'll put you off.
Yeah, no, I did well my first, like, an unnatural. I did well my first, like, few week, like, probably 10 or so times before I really bombed. And I'm a kind of person, personality wise, if I do something and I don't pick it up quickly,
yeah,
I don't do it. Like, if I play a video game and I suck at it immediately, I will quit. Like, I will not. Like, I'm always, that's my personality. I don't have that drive to get, you know, overcome the obstacles, you know, if no, I'm not exactly good at it right off the bat, like, fuck this. Like, so
that's all I am too. Like, I won't say, like, I'd like to say I'm the person that's like, I'm going to try until I get good at it, but I'm not, I want to be good at stuff. I mean, we all do.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's crazy. I honestly thought about this before too. So it's a really good question. I don't think, if I'd have done bad that first time, I know there's no way I would have ever done it again. And yeah, so I'm really thankful, because it's like, I went through life for a long time without really having much purpose. I was kind of lost for a while, you know, to some extent still am. But this has been, like, singularly, like, the constant in my life, that is the constant positive. And, you know, you bomb and stuff. I bomb, you know, on occasion. It's more and more infrequently now, which is awesome. It's the best, man. I just feel like I've done, I don't bomb as much as, like, I use bombing, you know, as a learning experience. That
exactly,
you know, so many guys, I was talking about this last night, who can't recognize their bombing. There's so many, like, new comics and local comics who they'll go on stage and they're doing terrible, and then they walk off like, that was great. And I'm like, what the fuck? Did you witness the same experience I witnessed right now? Like,
exactly. Record your shit.
I'm almost overly critical. If I do I'll do a 5-minute set, and if one joke did bad, I'm coming off stage mad that the one joke didn't work.
Yeah.
So because of that, like, I feel like I use those negative experiences to change and get better and do so. Bombing is definitely informative, for sure, if you take it and you view it objectively and use it to help yourself.
Yeah, man, bombing, it keeps you humble. Like, I was talking to talking to the older comedians and stuff, because they always have advice, and that's their advice is stay away, especially in your first couple of years. Even though I'm in the Hollywood area and stuff, it's stay away from the big clubs. And every time you do a good show, it's not really teaching you anything in terms of, like, when you're riding that wave of, oh man, I'm doing so good. It's not really teaching you anything. Whereas when you bomb, every time you bomb, it's a learning experience and you're taking something new. And over the past couple of weeks, it's actually been interesting. It's like there's an off season in comedy that I'm not aware of, because over the last couple of weeks, we've had Chris Rock, Dave Chappelle, and Cat Williams show up at the Comedy Store and just to work out new material. And I think that's fascinating. I love watching guys work out new stuff, because it's like, man, these guys are established. And I'm watching. I just watched a Chris Rock joke completely bomb, and it's surreal. It's like, really, this never stops.
Yeah, for sure. You don't ever think of them, you know, bombing, because you're only exposed to, you know, in the media, the stuff that they've tried and they've workshopped just like we do, you know? So, yeah, that's nuts. I couldn't imagine seeing Dave Chappelle. Being Kansas City, Dave Chappelle doesn't, you know, wander and open mics. Just happen to be in Kansas City, guys.
Show up by accident. Yeah, work out some new jokes.
I've never had a national headliner just pop in randomly at anything I've ever been at. Usually I know they're coming. Did me Chris Porter the other day, which is fucking rad. And
yeah. Tell me about that, because you have your new skit online that I'll link to it, but you're writing for a new talk show they're doing over there, and Chris Porter was on it.
Yeah, my friend Dustin Kaufman, he's moved back from L.A. 6 months or so ago, and he's from here originally, and I had never met him until he moved back, but I had known of him. We had been, you know, Facebook friends or whatever, and he moved back, and he had an idea. He wanted to do, like, a late-night talk show, like, for the internet, and right. He was actually... It's a funny story. He had never met me, and I had just introduced myself that night. And I was sitting there talking to a buddy of mine, Luis Powell, and Dustin sat down at our table and was pitching Luis, like, to be a writer for this show. And I just happened to be there.
Yes.
And Luis kind of mentioned that I'm really funny and that I would be perfect for what he's doing. And you know, he had never seen me do comedy, and he was, you know, he obviously wasn't that interested. But I was there and having in the conversation, so it just kind of got linked up to him by accident, you know. And there's basically, I've been, like, now within a month or more, Dustin's one of my closest friends now, and we fucking write nonstop. And me, him, and this other a friend of his named Brian David, who doesn't do stand up, he just writes comedy and sketches and stuff. The three of us have wrote majority of the stuff for the show. And we're like a well-oiled machine, man. We just write. And we've been doing it four episodes in, and they feel like they're getting better every single time. I really am proud of what we're doing. I think our sketches are funny, our monologue jokes, which is really what I have a lot of. A lot of my work goes into just monologue jokes and a lot of current event type stuff, but I'm really proud of what we're doing. I really think that it's good content, man, and it's fun to do. It's fun to do things that aren't the same, just stand up open mic over and over and over and over.
Right.
It's like exercising some other writing muscles. You know, I don't do a lot of current event stuff in my set. That's not really what I do. So this is like a really good practice for me, because I'd like to write. That's what I would eventually, I'd love to get a job writing comedy. That's the eventual, like, goal.
That's the dream, right? Because that's where money is. There's no money in stand-up.
Yeah, I mean, I love stand-up. I don't think I could ever stop doing stand-up altogether. But I'm not going to, I would be totally content using this to get to a job writing for, like, a show or something. That's like my dream.
Yeah.
I'm sitting around in a room with other funny people just... like workshopping jokes and writing, like, and just throwing jokes. Like, that's, to me, to get paid to do that would be incredible.
No, I totally agree with that, man. Ever since I was a kid, even before I knew what I wanted to do, I just knew that I always wanted to write for a sitcom. Even before I knew that, like, you did it with other people, it's like, I want to write a fucking sitcom.
I would love to do a sitcom or like a Tonight Show type thing.
I mean, like a Daily Show type.
Oh, incredible. Our talk show, it's been picking up steam. It's called Cough Drops, because his name's Dustin Kaufman, and K-A-U-F, you know, drops, and it's great, man. Chris Porter was on last week, and, you know, Chris Porter was there, and I've taken over the kind of the warm-up job, like, immediately prior to taping. I'll go out and do 10 minutes to try to, you know, because I can get the crowd back into it, you know, if they're... We tape in the middle of an open mic we started, so sometimes you'll get a string of comics that maybe aren't doing very well or trying new material or something. So I go up immediately prior to the show and now, and I'm doing time, you know, to get the crowd back into it. And then I, you know, play stage manager and tell everybody, you know, you don't, even if you don't think it's funny, laugh, you know, we're filming this for the internet, you know. So it's been great. It's been super fun.
Yeah, that's cool, man. And where were you? You were just sitting around. Were you, like, at a show, or where were you sitting when you heard this conversation happening about starting to write for the show?
Was that an open mic? Yeah. See, I had an open mic here.
Were you waiting to go up, or had you already gone up?
Had not gone up.
Okay.
I don't believe he had never seen me do comedy. And I don't even think he saw me do comedy that night. I'm fairly sure he didn't see me do comedy until another open mic, maybe the next week. And I did really well. And where he was like, you could tell he was totally down. He was on board with having me involved.
I always got to emphasize to people, man, how important it is to sit around at those shows and talk to people and network. Because I meet comedians all the time who show up, they do their time, and then they're off to the next mic. And it's, you know, I'm all about getting all the time you can, but I think getting time is only one part of comedy. The other part is if you don't know anybody, you're not going to do anything. You're going to be stuck in the open mics the rest of your life, right? You actually made the effort, and look where you are now. You're doing something that you can add to your resume, man. That looks really good.
I love sitting around and talking with comics. Almost as much as I love performing stand up, I love just having conversations with comedians. Because they're the best conversations. You don't have to be self, you know, you don't have to be aware, you know, of offending people, They're just some of the most fun, material or, just ideas I've had have just spawned out of conversations with other comics. So just in general, talking to comics is great. But like you said, networking. Since I started comedy, I made a real effort to be present and listen and talk and get to know as many people as possible. Because that's how you get on shows, is become friends with comics, and that's how you get out there better than anything. And I like you were saying, my biggest pet peeve is comics who come in, do their set, and leave. I think you need to show other comics respect that they show you. And I think it sucks when someone's at the end of an open mic and there's no one there. So I try to stay as much as possible. It gets hard sometimes just because some of these mics now just go so late. Night it was 1:15 in the morning. Jesus. And I hadn't even been called up yet. And so I didn't even know, I didn't know when, so I left. But I still had fun that last night just because I spent the entire night just literally talking to all my friends and getting to know like some other comics. And so it still was a worthwhile night, even though I didn't even get on stage.
Exactly, man. You know, I've never watched you do stand up. I haven't watched you yet, but I would imagine that your crowd work is pretty on point. And that's because I know you from the internet. And this is funny to me because a lot of times you talk to people on the internet, but you never actually talk to them the way you're supposed to. And that's like in person. So this is the first time I've actually spoken to you. Mm-hmm. But I guess known you through cyberspace for years. You're really big on the whole message board thing, or you used to be, right?
Well, we've known each other for way longer than either of us have been doing comedy.
Yes.
Way before we even had the idea probably to do comedy. I know for me at least. I don't do a lot of message board like, but I'm big on, there was a game online, which people who are listening don't know. It's called E-Fetting. It's E-Wrestling. It's a role-play-based wrestling game. Started when I was very young, when I was like 12 or 13. It's back in AOL, so there weren't the gaming options there are now. Like back in the early days, like internet or text-based gaming was pretty much what there was as far as multiplayer stuff. So you create a wrestler and you write a role play as the wrestler. You get put booked in matches and you write. It's like a creative writing contest about wrestling. You write about wrestling other dudes.
that's a great description of it. Yeah.
As lame as that is, that's what it is. It's a creative writing contest. But there was a community called GFED Wrestling, and I was known. I was very outspoken.
Oh, you were known. Believe me.
What? Yeah.
You were known, man. I got on there. I think I was like 13 when I got on there. Might have been a little bit older. Because I fell in love with it because it's the two things I really liked at the time were professional wrestling and writing creatively. So I got in there and I stayed away from the message boards because there were a couple people that I just knew would like, man, these guys are going to tear me apart. And you were one of them. And so I was just never a message boards person, but I always liked the game itself.
I was an asshole, man, for a long time. I think I, now that I have stand up as a creative, my creative outlet where I can be funny at, I feel like I'm much less of an asshole.
Yes. Because now it's, you're channeling it into a positive energy. A
positive direction, for sure.
Yeah.
But I would like to qualify, I was an asshole, but like, I had more friends on that website than almost anything. Like, I had lasting friendships.
Yeah. Even
so
today,
many
man.
From that website that, like, I wasn't, I think if you had a sense of humor and, like, could take it, like, and you gave it back, like, I love that. And so, yeah. To me, my demeanor on that website was not much unlike I am around friends now. It's just some people can't take ridicule on the internet, and then it just made it more fun to go at them. So,
yes.
Yeah, I was a dick, but...
And that's where that reputation came from, though. It was from people who couldn't take it and were like, oh, man, this,
for sure. And
this guy.
It was so funny because on that website, I wasn't an active role, like actively playing the game much at all. But like, I had a reputation of being like one of the big, like, talented guys. And it was almost solely from just being like funny on the message boards and just being brutal. I'm very quick witted. So like you said, like, I crowd work, I'm not bad at. I don't get experiences a lot. It's weird. A lot of that is come from just, you know, throwing up a witty quick response on the internet and trying to be funny.
Yeah.
Has helped me with that. But no, crowd work, I'm good at it, I feel. But it doesn't happen very often because I don't actively seek out crowd work. I don't. Mm-hmm. I wrote a bit recently, and I haven't performed it yet, where it's kind of like design crowd work, and that's new for me. I'm going to see how it works. I'm still kind of iffy about it. But I'll react if someone says something or does something. But I feel like when I'm doing well, I don't get a lot of, you know, anymore, a lot of people yelling out, you know. So the more confidence I show and the better I get, the less often people feel like they got to yell anything. When I started out, I get a lot of people yell fat jokes and stuff or insult, trying to make fun. But I'm a self-deprecating comic, so I'm making fun of myself.
Yes.
I'm usually hitting a fat joke really quick out of the gate on myself. So if you yell fatty after I just called myself fat for 3 minutes, like, it's okay, you're observant, you know? Like,
indeed, yeah.
You know, I'm aware, you know? So I don't feel like I get as much experience doing crowd work anymore. But I did a lot of it early on. A lot of bad bar shows really make I honestly think bad bar shows are the best way to become a better comedian.
Exactly.
If you can go into a bar where no one's paying attention and get the crowd to pay attention and like what you're doing, going to a comedy club is the easiest thing in the world.
Yes, absolutely, man. I think I have like my handicap, I think, handicaps me in another way, where you do a comedy show and nobody wants to heckle the blind guy. And so you don't really get the experience, I think, of doing the crowd work. So I think that like the heckle I get most often is, you're doing great, which is quite the heckle.
Yeah, that's the one thing that it, as a stand-up, it sucks because, and I can bet you get that a lot with your you know, disability and a handicap. It's with, and me being self-deprecating and fat, if I string too many jokes together, you don't want to get a reaction of pity.
Yes.
Because it's the worst. Like, I'll do a bunch of fat jokes. I'll be at open mic and I'm just like working new shit and old shit, and just I'll be doing a bunch of fat jokes in a row, and then you only can bash yourself for enough time for so long before people start going, "Aw."
Yes.
And it's like, no. Sometimes... And then I'll, like, the other day I did at a mic, like, I was doing a bit and I, "Aw," and I'm like, "No." I'm like, "This is
damn it.
Don't feel bad for me. This is not what I what I wanted, you know. I want, you know, you're supposed to like, I'm laughing at this about myself. Like, that's what I'm trying to get, but I mean, I'll never fault a crowd for reacting away. It's my job to get them to react a certain way.
Yeah.
So Like one of my biggest pet peeves is comics who blame the crowd for their shortcomings.
Oh man, yeah.
This crowd would have done so much better, but this crowd wouldn't have been so dumb. Well, no, you're supposed to tell jokes that the crowd can understand. Like,
yeah, you need to be able to read your audience, man. And that's,
absolutely.
Yeah. It's hard too, because when you do the self-deprecating jokes, like sometimes you get that aw reaction, and sometimes it gets just really uncomfortable and quiet. Like, man, I wonder if this guy's gonna like go home and kill himself after the show. Like, that's how awkward it's getting.
Dude, it so does. I have had that happen so many times. And that's where I'll like deviate from my normal set and just start throwing out a few like one-liners that I know will get the crowd back into it, because that's really awkward.
Crowd working, man. So you like, what's your preference in terms of like, I just want to explore you as a comedian now. What's your preference in terms of working a clean room or being able to work a little bluer?
I don't really, I've never done a clean show.
Oh, wow.
I've been booked to do one, but it got canceled due to weather. Mm-hmm. So I don't know how it would have went. We don't really have clean rooms, or I haven't ever been offered clean. I think offering me to do a clean show when people who know me know I'm not clean, I don't get offered that offered. I'd like to do more clean stuff. I'd like to eventually get that I like to eventually get enough clean material where I can do a clean set, because I know money-wise that's there. And, you know, just in general, media-wise, that's what I'm going to have to do to the point where I can, you know, write for television and stuff for sure.
Yeah.
So it's a process of writing clean, but I'm not going to pretend like I, you know, have – I don't even know if I have 10 minutes clean right now, to be honest, that I could – if you come and call me tonight and say I want you to do 10 tonight clean, I could probably do it, but it would be very, I'd be panicking for a while for sure, trying to piece it together.
What do you find is the dirtiest thing about your set? Is it just your language? Is it your content? Like, sometimes if I want to clean up jokes, all I'll literally do is I'll go through and I'll cut out the expletives and just like reinsert stuff to make it just as funny. But, PG-13, you know, I'm not doing comedy for third graders.
For sure. I do a lot of shit. I do a lot of jokes about pornography.
Okay.
So I don't know how much you can clean that up.
Yeah.
And I do most of my jokes are, I like to take sensitive topics, you know, and make them, you know, I don't know how much I can clean some of myself. A lot of my self-fat jokes, like self-deprecating stuff, I could probably easily do clean. I probably could do 10 clean now I think about it. Like, I just never go – I've never had to, so it's hard for me to think in that context, because I mainly do bar stuff. So I just don't give a shit, you know. Like, I'll just go in guns a-blazing. I don't set out to write anything specifically.
Specifically clean?
Specifically in general. Most of my writing is done like super late at night, and it'll just be something that come to mind, and I'll just like jot it down. And then I write in spurts, it seems like. I'll come up with a bit idea, and then it'll all kind of steamroll I'll kind of roll downhill from there, and I'll kind of have a whole bit pretty quickly. But I don't. I found when I sit down specifically with a topic or, you know, a purpose, like I'm going to write clean tonight, and it's never generally productive.
Right.
So yeah. I just kind of write and then are just, you know, stuff comes to me, you know. I'd like to do more clean stuff, though, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's a challenge, and I think that's the fun of it. And for me personally, like, I like doing – I actively seek out, like, community events and charity shows and things like that, because it's a great story to tell. Like, tonight I'm doing a show at an ice skating rink, which I there's literally going to be an ice skating rink in between me and the crowd, so that's going to be weird.
Are there any kids there?
Probably.
That's one of my most terrifying things.
Isn't it though?
I don't want to be that guy who takes innocence away from a child. I've done It happened a couple times. I show up one of my first shows I was booked on. It was out of this town called Oak Grove, real smaller, more a town outside a suburb of Kansas City, probably 20 minutes out from where I was living at the time. And then I show up and it's at a restaurant, and I walk in and the guy's setting up the show and there's karaoke going on. He has karaoke / comedy shows. He has both. And it's just little kids everywhere. And I'm like, I at the time was 2-3 months in, and everything I had was super dirty.
Yeah.
And I'm freaking out. I'm like, there's little kids here. He goes, oh, don't worry. Like, we put the kids in the other room, like adjoining room of the restaurant, while we do the stand-up. And then they come back afterwards to do karaoke. Like, they're in an adjoining room, and I'm using a microphone. Like, just because they can't see me doesn't mean they can't hear me. Yeah. You know, like... So it was super awkward, and it's like, but I mean, I at the same time, like, they booked me knowing what I was going to do, and I wasn't booked to do clean material, so I have, you know, I just did my set, but it gets super awkward. I don't want to tell jokes to little kids. No desire to do that.
The funniest thing to me is being around a comedian who's doing an open mic. And they're in the middle of doing the dirtiest set I've ever seen. And then a family walks in with like a 5-year-old.
Oh.
And the change in that comedian's demeanor, it's just, it's hilarious. Sometimes they'll joke about it and they'll try and make it funny. But you can even tell, like, at that point, it's like they're legitimately uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Done. And that's why I do comedy in bars, man. Because it's like, if it's 10:30 or 11 p.m. at a bar and you bring your toddler in, then that's on you. Like, not my
fault. The toddler has worse problems than your comedy at that point.
Yeah. So it's funny, man. I thought of doing a comedy for, you know, kids. I did a show at our local town has a festival every year called Santa Caligon Days in Independence here, suburb of Casey, another suburb of Casey. And this guy I knew, Jeff, who was trying to do this thing to promote, like, his tried to start a comedy foundation. It didn't work and everything, but it was a comedy charity. It was really weird. And he was setting up a show at this part of the thing. He had rented out like an office space in the middle of the festival. We were funneling people like from the crowd into the show. And I prepared only dirty stuff, and I show up and there's kids everywhere.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what the fuck? And he's like, well, I told everyone it's an R-rated show, so just do your material. And I'm just like, ah, yeah, it was great. So I did like a completely neutered, like, awful, worst, one of the worst sets of my entire life. Because I don't feel comfortable mentioning rape with children present. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
And I don't have a lot of rape jokes, but I have one that at the time I was doing, and it was one of my biggest laughs. But it's just, if I don't have to, to do shows for kids ever again, I wouldn't be upset.
So even now that you've been doing it for so long, if a kid walked in on your set, would do you think you'd be able to adjust, or would you just say, fuck it and do it anyway?
No, I definitely handle it better than I did at first, for sure. I could probably adjust, but it's just, it's weird how much I just don't want to, like, I just don't want to be that guy who, you know, fucking makes their parent explain, like, to the child what scissoring is. I don't want to be the fucking cause of that conversation happening.
But you know what, though, like, in this day and age, that, you know, kids have access to iPads now.
I knew all kinds of fucked up shit. Like,
you know what scissoring is by the time you're 6 years old? I'm guessing. I don't know at this point.
My joke about scissoring is also about Ric Flair. So that's my favorite thing myself right now.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
I'll tell you. I have a joke about webcam girls and how I was on looking at webcam girls because I want some more interaction in my life and my porn viewing. And I found a girl named Miss Vietnam. And Miss Vietnam to me sounded like an 80s professional wrestling gimmick. And I want my porn stars to be as much like 80s professional wrestlers as possible. Like, I would like love it if the girl was like fingering herself and like another girl snuck in behind her in the room and just blasted her in the head with a chair. And I would like freak. I'd pay so much money if two girls were scissoring there on the floor and one of them reversed it into a figure four leg lock. I was happy about that. That soundbite made me feel really good right there. So, but no, so yeah, I have a joke about scissoring and a figure four leg lock. So as a wrestling fan, I tell that joke just because it makes me happy. Like,
yeah. Yeah. We're both big wrestling fans. One thing I'm breaking the rule of this podcast, which is we're not allowed to talk about wrestling, but whatever. We're both big wrestling fans. And one thing I've noticed is that not a lot of other people are. And when you spend a lot of time like me, when you surround yourself with people who like that stuff and you're online with people who like that stuff, you forget that not a lot of people know who John Cena is.
Super aware of not mentioning wrestling. I used to be super ashamed of wrestling publicly. I wouldn't talk about it. And then it's just now I've got to the point where I don't give a fuck anymore. Like, I'll talk about everything embarrassing in my life on my set. So it's like, wrestling to me is just a part of me. So, and then I remember doing a wrestling joke at an open mic and they having all these comics come and be like, you watch, I watch wrestling. And like,
yeah,
we all were afraid to talk about wrestling publicly, you know, until like, I kind of like broke the ice. And now actually there are a lot of local comics. There's a lot more than I thought who are super into wrestling. I watch pay-per-views with a bunch of comics, you know, I think it's more common than people think. But my wrestling material, I try to use references from like the Attitude Era. Like, if I do stuff about The Rock or Stone Cold, like, people get that.
Yeah, people know who they
are. If I did a joke about, you know, Drew McIntyre, I don't think I would. I'd get like three of my buddies would be dying, but like, it's not exactly, I don't want to play to that small. But like, I have a joke about, I have a joke about how I used to do, I peaked romantically during AOL chat rooms. And I was like, that's like the highlight of my life. Because back then you could deceive women so much easier. Now everyone has everything has profile pictures and verification and stuff. Back then you could just be who you wanted to be. Like, you have no idea how many women I had cyber sex with as Stone Cold Steve Austin. Like, and so I have a whole bit about that.
That's a fucking great premise. I love that.
Yeah. So, and I mean, but I've only really been writing jokes about wrestling for like the last 6 months. But now I find I'm writing a lot of shit about wrestling. Because that's what I enjoy, you know. And so if I can write a wrestling joke that is publicly accessible, you know, enough that most of the crowd's going to get it, then I absolutely am going to do that.
Yeah. I have a lot of trouble getting a laugh when I do a wrestling joke, but I'm not ashamed of it so much anymore because I think wrestling in the comedy world, it's kind of come up a little bit. Like, you got the guys from The Nerdist, and they're always either talking about wrestling or they have wrestlers on their show and stuff. You have like CM Punk was on Marin.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know who Marty DeRosa is at Chicago.
Yeah, he's tremendous.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of him. A big fan of, you know, Colt Cabana, obviously. And, you know, there's a lot of, you know, wrestlers getting in. And Ziggler does comedy now, apparently, which I would love to.
He does The Comedy Store, which I had no idea about, but that'd be great to watch him do comedy.
I would love to meet him and see him do comedy, man.
Oh my God.
I've always been a fan of him, you know, as a wrestling fan.
Yeah.
One of my absolute favorites. So when I heard he does stand up now, it just made me super excited. And, whenever they're in Kansas City, it's like a couple buddy of mine will send him messages like, "Hey, come to this open mic," but after the show. But yeah, I've never been too concerned with coming to our open mic. So, but yeah, that's awesome. No, I love it.
It's cool, man. Hey,
it's recent too because I got out of wrestling for a long time, and I'm super back into it. And wrestling right now to me is better than it has been in a long, long time. So,
no, I completely agree. It's really fun to watch right now if you're a wrestling fan, especially over the last couple of weeks in particular. You got a lot of new guys coming back and stuff. Hey, we're going to wrap things up. If you want to hear more wrestling talk, we got the Monday podcast every Monday here on thingsdeathsays.net, the People's Podcast. Let us know your Twitter and stuff and how people can get a hold of you and see more of your jokes. And hopefully at some point you can get a video online and we can see your comedy.
Yeah, I'm just super nervous. Like, I don't like to show – I feel like my comedy is ever evolving, so putting video out there is like – once people see the video, that's what they're going to think I am. I'm just super paranoid about that. But eventually we'll have video. I'm going to start cutting shorter videos with bits and stuff, putting them online soon. So, yeah, I'm on Twitter. It's Jeremy NKC, Jeremy INKC. Nothing like creating a Twitter handle that limits you geographically. if I could go back, I wouldn't have done that. But that's what how people know me now. And then I'm on, you know, Facebook. Facebook.com/JeremySmithComedy. I pretty much generally, unless you look like a bot, I'll accept all friend requests, and that's how I, you know, post shit about shows and keep people updated. So I'm fine doing that. And no website yet, but coming soon. And then check out Cough Drops on YouTube, KAUF Drops, DROPS. And I'm really proud of what we're doing there. And last week's show with Chris Porter went up yesterday, and I think it's one of the best ones. It's the best one we've done so far. So we encourage people to check that out and subscribe to that to see, you know, some stuff that I feel really happy about.
Very cool having Jeremy Smith on the show. Thanks to Jeremy for joining me, for talking to me for almost an hour. And thank you for tuning into Culture My Pop on thingsdezsays.net. Yes, if you're a longtime fan, I am aware we broke the golden rule a few times. I hope you're happy. All right, remember, we are on the internet, not just here, but on other parts of the internet. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at Des Delgadillo. Faraz will be back with us next week. He's also on Twitter at The Wisp. That's THAWISP. And of course, the Oreo Monster, who's still in Orlando in our developmental territory. He'll be back next week too, hopefully. He's at MonkeyPusher69. Remember, you can follow our guest, Jeremy Smith, on Twitter at JeremyNKC. And remember, Amazon.com. Our link is up on thingsdeathsays.net. It'll take you to Amazon. Help us out. Leave a review on iTunes. Do all sorts of awesome things for us. We would really appreciate that. We'll be back next week talking to another very special guest. I'm not going to say anything yet, but it's going to be cool, man. We'll talk to you then. Thanks for listening.